This is Roger in Virginia with the Learning Curve. Today's program is a bit of an innovation, but very important. We're actually going to be going over some of the material in our book, How to Learn, How to Teach, Overcoming the Seven Barriers to Comprehension. And the item we're going to be discussing is on page 16. It's the subject of how to recover for your child its certainty that it actually can learn. One of the great tragedies that goes on in American schools is that kids can become convinced that they're slow or dull, or they can't get it, or they can't learn. And you as a parent can reverse this incorrect thinking and restore to your child the truth that they are capable of learning. So this is a very important subject.
So before we get started, I just would like to do a brief, very brief recap of our previous shows, just to give you a setup and a setting of what's been going on. In our prior shows, we discussed individual barriers, their signs and symptoms. So as a parent, you can find, if you see these things happening, you say, ah, that's the barrier my child is suffering from, and how you would go about remedying them. We've questioned others in the education game, discussing current topics such as teacher evaluation. Dyslexia is not really a disability, but could very well be the mark of a higher ability to learn. And we've also talked with somebody who helps adults to recover their education, among many other topics. But today, as Roger has stated, we wanted to do something that was much more practical, much more hands-on, and do a real workshop type of a show today. We're going to be going through the rehabilitation of certainty on the ability to learn procedure. I know that's a mouthful, but basically what it is, it's the recovery of anybody's consideration. And when I say that, I mean the thought that they can actually learn. So we can help you help your kids to realize that they actually can learn. If you run this procedure or exercise on yourself, you will be able to recover your certainty of the fact that you can learn. You can learn anything if you choose to. I once ran this on one of my tutoring students because I tutor adults who are working towards their GED. It was a couple years ago. But I ran this on one of my students. The student kept saying whenever we would try and do something new, they'd say, oh, I can't learn this. So I got everybody else going. And I took the student aside and I ran this process on them. The change in them was absolutely miraculous, absolutely amazing. Not only did they realize that they can learn, but they realized that they have been learning all along. Maybe they just haven't been learning in the conventional style of learning, but they have been learning all along. So they were really switched on after that. It was like a light bulb went off and they just became a voracious learner. That's the kind of miracle that this particular exercise can bring about. As I said, this exercise is called the Rehabilitation of Certainty on the Ability to Learn Procedure. And the purpose of this procedure is to restore to the student their certainty on the truth that they can learn and that they have successfully learned. They have successfully learned in the past. The procedure will also reveal to the student the methods by which they learn. Roger, can you tell us how would a parent go about introducing this to their child?
Well, it's actually a very easy procedure, a very friendly procedure. And after you've observed that your child has expressed problems with learning and begun to doubt their ability to learn and comprehend, you pull them aside and you sit down with them on a friendly basis and you say, the first question actually is, you as a parent, we'll call you the coach for want of a better word, you just ask your child, well, recall a time you realized that you had successfully learned something. If this doesn't elicit an easy positive answer, you can also ask them, well, recall a time you were aware that you had learned or accomplished something that you wanted to do. Now, the answer can be anything at all that the student has learned or accomplished that made them feel competent at something. Examples would be for a young child learning to tie their own shoelaces, learning to button their own clothes, learning to add or ride a bicycle or spell, or learning to read their first simple word, bake a cake, tie a knot, anything at all. It's a win at learning, because this is the basic phenomena that you're wanting to recover for your child and have them rehabilitate their certainty that they actually can learn.
I just want to put an example in there, and that is one of the examples that my student came up with when I ran this process on them, was that they realized that they were able to navigate the New York City subway system. Now, you have to realize that these students that I'm dealing with are semi-literate. They are coming to us, either they can just barely learn, or they can read at a third grade level. Imagine trying to put a third grader into the New York City subway system and telling them to find your way around. Well, these people manage to do that on a daily basis.
Another example in an adult situation is I've actually seen illiterate adults who've managed to learn to repair motor cars, for example. When you get them to comprehend the basic phenomena involved in all of this, it really turns their life around. They become very much more at cause over their life and start winning. In fact, the object of this process that we're about to give you is to recover to the student those moments of feeling accomplished at learning or mastering something that enable them to progress in life and be more in charge of their own affairs. And that's a very important accomplishment for anybody. So here's the sweet little rundown. Step two then, after the student has told you what they've learned, or maybe they will say, yes, I recall it, and they haven't told you what it is, you say, so what was it? And you get the answer, you simply acknowledge. Now, you don't evaluate and you don't add any comments. That's a no-no. You simply say, well, great, thank you. And then the rundown. The next question is, when was that? And the child will recall or tell you when it was.
Can you tell me what the reason for that question is?
Of when was it?
Yes.
It actually brings that moment to fullness in their present time. The other way of looking at it is you could say they return to it, but that's not all that accurate. What happens in asking when was it, they literally recall or call that event to their present awareness. Now they've got it here. They're owning it and experiencing it and perceiving it. And you simply once again acknowledge and you say, fine, excellent, good, or whatever is appropriate. Next question is, where was it? And once again, they'll reorient themselves correctly. And the reasons for these questions, by the way, is it puts the child more and more at cause over these events, because they're controlling them in time and space. So now you ask the child to describe what happened. Ask the question, what happened? Or describe what happened. Now, having them describe it causes them to further experience it and expand the particular event and their knowledge of it. Now, the next question is actually quite important. How did it make you feel? That question causes them to recall and to re-experience their feeling big and at cause and in control of things. And you simply acknowledge their answer with the simple, well, excellent, fine, okay, or whatever is appropriate. The next question is, describe your mood level. You may need to have your child made literate on this subject of what do we mean by mood level. And it's simply defined easily as a sort of a combination of emotion and attitude. Next question then is, how big were you spiritually at that time? Because the feeling of big or feeling collapsed and dotted is not really an emotional mental thing. It's really a spiritual presence where the being or the person feels how aware and how powerful and in charge they were at the time. Sometimes they feel smaller than the event. Sometimes they feel bigger, as though the event is within them. this relationship is actually important. So then the question after that becomes, so what did you learn? And you have them articulate the fullness of what they learned. And you simply, once again, acknowledge the answer. So the next question then is, what did you do to learn the item learned? To whatever it is, to buckle in your shoes, for example.
And why is that important?
Well, that's important because it puts the child again at cause over the action that caused them to learn or enabled them to learn. And it's likely to reveal to them their style or method of learning. If it was a mental thing that they learned, they'll become more at cause over using their mind in the learning process. Whereas if it was a physical action, they'll become more at cause over the physical actions of learning.
So in other words, they learn what their successful actions were.
That is part of it, absolutely. And you can run this little drill more than once on more different things learned, so that they become quite used to having learned many things in different ways. But this will actually reveal to the child their preferred learning style, which is covered in chapter 1 in our book. We all have our own particular learning style. So the next question after you ask them, what did they do, or what did the child do to learn to buckle his shoe or whatever it was, what did learning, buckling your shoe, the item, enable you to do? So now we're expanding the child's attention onto them being at cause over life, so they can operate in life. Question, as I said, is what did learning to tie your shoelaces or button your shirt enable you to do? You simply acknowledge their answer. The next question after that is, now by the way, you should be alert in running this process of your child suddenly beginning to laugh and feel very good about this whole subject of learning. And sometimes that's the spot where you need to simply look at them and say, have you just become aware of the truth that you can really learn? And if they go, yeah, that might be the spot where you're going to end off, because you've accomplished the end result of this rundown. However, you can continue, but with caution, because you don't want to go past the big win.
I'm sorry, I want to ask a corollary question. And what happens if a child doesn't seem to have much of an answer for any of these questions? Is there a way that a parent can prompt or draw out from the child?
That's always a bit risky, and I wouldn't try that. You just simply acknowledge that they don't have an answer. And you say, well, let's check the next question. Of course, you've got to have that they did learn something. When you get down to the question, what did you do, is the point where you might begin to be able to ask probing question like, well, did you actually use your hands, or did you use your mind, or ask a probing question that would suggest an action that occurred or a method by which they learn. But you're just going to have to wing it if it gets that rough. But I doubt it. I've never seen it get that rough, unless Virginia saw it get that rough with an adult. But adults are far denser than kids in these things. So the next question then is, after you've established what learning to tie their shoes enable them to do, is how have you used learning to tie your shoe to help yourself or others or another? And that begins to restore to them their ability to be in charge of themselves, their own affairs. Because you note that clever questionnaire, how have you used tying your shoes to help yourself? That's a very important item. Putting a child in charge of their own affairs. Once again, you simply acknowledge the answer and you don't evaluate and you don't make unnecessary comments. Next question is, so how could you use learning to tie your shoes, the item, to help yourself, others, or another in the future? Now, that's also a very important question because it focuses their attention on their future game in life. It puts them in charge of their own futures, and it brings them out of the past and gets them involved in playing the real game of life, which of course is addressing the future, not being stuck in the past. The final question here is, how do you feel about your ability to learn now? And that's where you should be very likely be getting wonderful answers like, wow, you know, I really can learn. It's great. I like it and all that sort of stuff. Yes, if the student is not bright and happy about their ability to learn, you can simply repeat step one and two and proceed on through the drill again. But doing it just once will usually do it for a young child. Now, the other thing to say here is that depends on the age of the individual or the child. With a young child, it's not necessarily to do this other rundown that we have. But with older students or adults, one can sometimes do what's called a thoughts or things exercise, because realize, Napoleon Hill said it very well in his writings in his book, I think it was Think and You Grow Rich. He said that thoughts are things. They actually do become objects in our minds and in our spiritual mental universes, and they do determine our future. The thoughts you have that you're automatically operating on are actually creating your future, whether you are particularly aware of it or not. So this is the thoughts of things exercise, and having the thought or consideration that you're dumb and dull and you can't learn easily really is screwing up your future. So with an older student, you can actually ask, once they've articulated what the thought is, whatever it is, let's assume it is that I can't learn. You say, okay, so connected to that thought, where is it? And it'll be located around them somewhere in their mental or spiritual universe, in their head or on their face or up above their head. It'll be wherever it is. So where is it? Next question, what is its size? It will have a size. It'll be bigger than them or smaller than them. And then connected to the thought of I can't learn or whatever it is, what is its form or shape? Once again, you simply acknowledge the answer. Next question, what is its color? Next question, what is its weight? Next question, what is its duration? Now, it might well have been created with a duration, i.e. a future of forever. It may well have just simply been created without any consideration of future, but it's just now I am, and as now, it continues on in the now. And that's the tragedy of the misuse of the mind by silly thinking. The next question is, what is its mood level? Connected to the thought of whatever the thought is, what are, plural, its mood levels? And have the student simply describe and state what the mood levels are, and they will unlock, and you simply once again acknowledge them. Next question is, connected to the thought, whatever the thought is, what are its limitations? And that will pull off and lift off all of the limitations and confining effects and the self-sabotaging effects of these negative thoughts. It's a wonderful rundown, and if we use it regularly with clients, and it's amazing to watch them come alive and have major realizations of how they've been getting in their own way with these unfortunate negative thoughts. Then you can ask, connected to the thought, what are its intentions? Because thoughts cause you to then do something. For example, if you think that you can't learn, you tend to act out the intention to avoid areas of attempting to learn or subjects that you failed at. So there are intentions involved. You can also, when you get down to this stage of the rundown, ask, connected to the thought, what about it must not be experienced? And then the final action is, connected to the thought, what are its consequences? And the student then is in a position to articulate all the things that derive from having this unfortunate thought, and then they get free from the whole mess. And pull off all of the consequences. You can repeat that question 3 or 4 times. And if needed, you can ask the student as a final question connected to this area, this subject, is there a more optimum thought that you could have instead? And that causes them to create for themselves a better thought paradigm and operating basis. So we'd like to hear from you folk out there in audience land, and don't be bashful about emailing us at questions@howtolearneasily.com, because we can actually give you this information in writing if you want to give us an email address and request it.
Or if you are running this process, either one of them, the rehabilitation of sure of certainty to learn, or the thoughts or things, if you find that you're running this process and you start to run into a little difficulty, please don't hesitate to email us with your phone number. We will be very happy to call you and talk you through the whole thing so that you and your student are rehabilitated. All right, this has been Roger and Virginia
at the Learning Curve. Next week, we're going to have a rather interesting and wonderful program. We expect to have the editor of
Homeschool Enrichment.
Yes, Homeschool Enrichment. So for all you homeschooling parents, next week's program of the Learning Curve is really for you.